music. We've had so many problems trying to get this thing recorded for the last few weeks. I don't want to take any chances.
Yes. No loud noises. You'll scare the internet.
This is the latest episode of Crazy Comics and Stories with me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the internet, which doesn't seem to work worth a damn, is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Jeez. You know, it's probably just as well we've been down for a couple weeks, because I caught the worst cold up here. It just killed me. You know, it just, last week, I mean, my voice was about 2 octaves lower than it was now, which was real cool when you're trying to, you know, talk smooth jazz to a lady. But boy, it's no good when you're trying to drain your sinuses at 3 a.m.
Well, and you also, I've had to work a lot. Those of you who've been listening for a while know that I'm working 2 part-time jobs. I got a part-time job at a group home, and the theater had cut back my hours, like, unbelievably, which is why I got the part-time job at the group home. So I send the group home every week. Here's when I can work. Well, last week they sent me a list back saying, hey, we need you to work pretty much every day. And me, one of those guys who likes money, said, sure. Then the schedule for the theater came out, and they actually gave me shifts. So I would wake up at like 5 in the morning, get to the group home at 6, work there till, you know, 3 in the afternoon, then drive to the movie theater, work there till midnight, get home, go to bed, wake up, boom, 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 boom. Although it wasn't all bad.
In the meantime, Corey and I would be emailing each other, because although I don't, for the last, good Lord, week, I have not gotten internet at the hotel I'm staying at up here, because when it rains, you can't get a satellite connection, and they prioritize what gets up, sent up and down, and apparently I'm like last on the list. But at work, I can get email, and so Corey and I would email, and we'd say, okay, Corey would say, like, I've got a 4-hour window tonight. And I'd say, okay, when I get home, I'll turn it on. I get back to the hotel, no internet, no way to tell Corey. So we kind of worked on what we call the presidential rule. I figured the longest I would wait for the president would be 30 minutes. After 30 minutes, I'm out the door. So if he hasn't gotten me online in 30 minutes, forget about it. And go out, you know, at least he could go get some sleep, and then I would sit around, bang my head against the keyboard, and watch 2.5 Men reruns.
Oh. You know, we don't even torture prisoners with that show.
Yeah, there are some things that just, well, we don't need to go there.
Well, believe it or not, despite not having a show for the last couple of weeks, this here show has a sponsor. And that sponsor is Worldwide News. The web strip about the lowest rated cable.
How wide is it?
It's the whole world. We're in the middle of a news story with a new program manager at the station where we're making fun of Texas. We're making fun of corporate meetings. We're making fun of everything. And you can go check it out at worldwidenews.solitairerose.com, part of the Solitaire Rose family of websites.
Say, just when do you put new episodes up there, Corey?
That would be every Tuesday and Thursday, although we did miss one.
So instead of being 4 behind, I'm only 3.
Yep. Dan emailed me, I think it was like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and said, tomorrow's strip is going to be late. Our car got stolen. And he didn't find out about it till like, 11 or 12 at night. He parked it, and then he went outside to go somewhere, and there no car. And I told him, you know what? I think that's a little more important than making sure the new strip gets up. Why don't you deal with that, and we'll skip today. So, believe it or not,
he's using the Neil Adams approach. My artwork got stolen.
Well, no, it was his car.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe his computer was in the car or something.
No.
Thank God it wasn't.
No, he had to deal with having the police out and doing this and making phone calls and on and on and on. And it just proves that even though I am a harsh taskmaster, I have a heart.
Lies.
So, Joe, what are you going to plug?
Well, you know, I'm not doing eBay, and I'm not doing the Toy Peddler, at least not till I get back. Although, if you do go to thetoypeddler.com, he's got a special offer for everybody. If you've never sold there online before, he'll give you $5 in listing credits free. And they actually go quite a long way because most of his listing credits are only 25 cents a pop. So you can list quite a bit. He's also raising money for Make-A-Wish Foundation. I've donated $100, and so if you want to go there, drop some coins in the fountain. He's more than willing to accept whatever you want. When the Internet's working, since there's not a heck of a lot to do up here in this portion of Alaska, I've been sucked into Castle Age on Facebook. So if you're interested, send me a Castle Age request. And if you don't care about the game, cancel the application once I accept. Because what it is Castle Age, the more people you have supposedly playing with you, the stronger you are. But you don't really need to be involved with it. You just need to be logged in. It's kind of like the way Mafia War. You get all those friends sending you, join me in Mafia War. You don't have to play it. So I'm like, okay, fine. I'll be part of their mob, but then the next time they send me something, I just block the application so I don't have to deal with it. FallCon is right around the corner, and it is Saturday, October 16th, 2010. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but Nick sent me a note saying the dealer tables are 73% sold out, so if you are interested in getting a dealer table, you better hustle on over mncba.com and send Nick a note saying you want to get online. And last thing I'm going to plug, mattressranch.com. No, it's not a new sponsor on the show. It happens to be a guy who's about the same age as the Six Flags guy, but he's up here in Alaska peddling mattresses, and his commercials are hilarious. So go to mattressranch.com. Link to his – he's got all his commercials on YouTube, so you can go there too and just check them out, man. I mean, it's a gas. I don't need a mattress. I couldn't get it home if I wanted to, but man, after watching this guy, I want to go buy a mattress. That's pretty much all I got.
Now, you know how we talked about how the group home was just throwing shifts at me right and left there for a few days, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I worked Monday. Now, the group home I used to work at, I worked in group homes for teenage boys who were in trouble with the law. Worked in those forever. And Joe, when I explained to you that, you know, I was getting up, going to work, leaving work, and going to work, probably reminded you of when I would talk to you in the 90s, because I was doing that all the time. But Monday, I came in to the group home, and they're older residents who are developmentally disabled, but they have day programs they go to. Well, one of the residents obviously didn't want to go to her day program because she woke up 1 minute before her bus showed up, after staff had, you know, come on, you need to get up. Your bus is going to be here. Come on, you need to have breakfast. 1 minute before the bus, she comes wandering out asking for breakfast. They go, your bus is here. She goes, oh, I'm not going to make it. And the bus leaves. So she stayed home. And as punishment for staying home, she could still watch TV, but she couldn't choose what she was to watch on TV. So she got done with, you know, breakfast and getting cleaned up and everything. She came out and she turned, you know, she came to me and said, could you turn on Gilligan's Island? And there were only two of us there because there were only three residents. And the staff said, no, she can have the TV on, but you have to choose what's on the TV. So I grab the remote and I start flipping through, and they're on G4. They're rerunning their live coverage from Comic-Con all day long. So I put it on, and she sits down on the couch and starts watching. Now, the residents, a lot of them, they just watch TV. They don't care what's on. So she watched Comic-Con coverage with me all day. And I would get up and go help the other two residents who had the day off. You know, one of them was, you know, doing laundry, and I helped with that, and the other one was doing some cleaning and doing some craft projects. So I would get up and help them. But basically, I got paid to watch Comic-Con coverage with one of the residents, and every so often I'd go, well, that looks like a pretty good comic. You interested in getting that one? She'd go, yes.
I like that.
Now, here's the thing about the Comic-Con coverage, and we're going to talk more about Comic-Con coverage next time. But I watched like six or seven hours of coverage. They interviewed.
Oh, can I interject here a moment, Corey?
Sure.
For the record, the reason why we were late with the podcast, because we've done it pretty much every week for 20 weeks, and then we kind of fumbled for 2 weeks, and it wasn't because we went to the San Diego Comic-Con. I want that on the record. Matter of fact, my extent of Comic-Con coverage was going on eBay every day and looking for really cool exclusives that I could buy. I almost felt like I was there. I did pick up one that I thought was really cool. It was a Hot Wheel, Wonder Woman's Invisible Plane. And you could probably find it now on eBay or thetoypeddler.com, but when I first saw it, I thought it was a joke. And I thought, oh, wait, because you look at it, it's got a card, it says Wonder Woman's Invisible Plane, and you can't see nothing in the card.
Oh, that's so great.
And I got some really
great
detailed pictures. Well, that would have been cool. But there is, in fact, a little hunk of clear plastic inside it in the shape of a plane. So I did order one, and by the time I get out of here in 20 days and falling, I hope to have it at home. And like I said, I'll try to post a picture of it on our site, but you could, you know, eBay, toypeddler.com, thetoypeddler.com, you'll find it.
Although I think it'd be a lot better if there was nothing in there.
I think that would have been funny too. The other thing I was hoping to get, I asked Nick to, and I haven't talked to him, but WWE had a number zero comic for their series that was autographed, or that was done by Jerry Lawler again. As we know, he's an artist. He's done various covers of things we've talked about. And he was actually at the con. And if I was there, I would have spent time in line to get an autograph from him, because he's pretty sweet. But I asked Nick if he could find one, and like I said, I'll find out when I get home in, let's see, 20 days and falling.
So here's my complaint about the Comic-Con coverage. It was on for like 6 hours or something. I saw two interviews with comic book people. I saw less than a minute with Joe Quesada, and then about a minute and a half with one of the editors from Top Cow. And that was it. The rest were, oh, look, here's the cast for this TV show that's coming out. Here's the cast for this movie that's coming out. Oh, here's a comedian who's dropping by to promote God only knows what that has nothing to do with comics. Endless celebrities going through with no comic book people. You've got 6 hours of comic book coverage. Interview a writer. How about an artist? How about show somebody doing a sketch? Bastard. Mm-hmm. Damn them all.
Yeah. You know, even what little I watched of actual coverage, the only thing that really struck me is two things. First of all, there was a sighting of Alan Payne.
Really?
You didn't know, as a friend. A real old friend of ours. He originally met him at Dreamhaven Books when the store was in Dinkytown, one of its, I think its second incarnation there. And Alan, of course, he has tons of ideas. I think he's one of the original founders of the MCBA.
Yes, he is.
And, of course, we always teased him because, you know, he took credit for almost anything. Matter of fact, I think he was the one that originally figured, you know, hey, Stan, turn to Hulk gray. but I kid Alan. And, you know, the one year I went out to Comic-Con, I actually ran into him. And at the time he was working for Tokyo Pop. I saw him online, and now he's working in sales at IDW.
Oh, cool.
So that was kind of neat to see him. Oh, he's still around. I'm going to probably try to hunt him down and send an email to him. Let him know what's up. See if he's got any exclusives for the podcast he can leak our way.
That'd be fun.
The second thing that occurred to me about the con, is the only thing from Marvel that really struck me is they had the entire cast of the Avengers on stage. You know? And I was like, okay, I'm already hyped for the whole movie concept. I think the idea of making movies and then linking them all in one big one is brilliant. You know, and plus as the actors, I mean, you're talking job security. You know, you've got at least three movies as a solo and then maybe three as a group. I mean, what else do you want? But like you said, very little in comics. I mean, I didn't go away with any, oh my Lord, I gotta have this and I'm gonna go insane if I don't. And I just go insane in all sorts of other little ways.
Well, being trapped in Alaska for 3 months.
Yeah, I got to remember I volunteered.
I'm not going to say anything about your volunteerism, but I'll giggle quietly when the show is over.
You're not going to volunteer anything?
Well, the theme of this episode is leftovers. Because as I was going through listening to some of our old shows.
I got some in the fridge. I was getting hungry.
Well, I've got some leftover pizza.
Save it for me. I'll be back in 20 days and falling.
In the 20-some episodes of this show, there have been times when we've referenced stories or started stories and then wandered off onto a rabbit trail and never gotten back to the main story. So I thought what we'd do, we'd go back.
Up here in Alaska, it's a moose trail.
And the moose are the ones who are messing with your internet.
Yeah, they'd only hold still and keep their heads up high.
So I thought we would tell stories that we started and didn't finish, starting with the car crashing through the hair salon next to the comic shop. We'll start with
now,
violence.
I'll give you this happened. Yes, violence is good. I wasn't there, but when I was coming up to the store, and I'm trying to think, it had to have been on a Friday, because I think that was, or was it Saturday? No, it was Saturday, because that's when Big Mike was working. And I was happened to be off that day, so I'd stop up and, you know, hang, get the money for the deposits, whatever. Now, I want you to imagine an intersection. On the intersection, put one of those roundabouts, the fancy traffic device where instead of having perpendicular intersection, you put a little circle with an island in the middle. So you yield, and then when you get a chance, you just go around the circle until you finally get to the street you want, and you exit. Real popular in Europe, and they're starting to show up, especially in suburbs.
When you're on the roundabout, you have to sing the song Roundabout by Yes. I'll be the roundabout.
You know, it depends on how tough traffic is, I suppose. If it's not tough, you know, you're going to get off and go, I'm on the street I'm on.
Well, and it's a Yes song, so it's probably like 25 minutes long.
Very true.
And now here's the extended 7-minute keyboard solo.
And then it just kind of fades out when you think it should keep going on because they just changed keys. But the roundabout was actually elevated. They plant flowers around it. So it's kind of like Charlie Brown's little pitcher mound in the middle of the road. Now, my shop was, help me with distance here, I think maybe about 500 feet from that, maybe longer.
Yeah, about.
I'd say at least 25 yards. I mean, it was quite a ways away, and there was a parking lot in front. So as I come up, I discover there is massive emergency equipment all around the building. The fence to the other side of my store is wiped out, and there's glass everywhere. And naturally, I think, oh, crap, what happened? I pull into the parking lot across the street. You know, I come over, you know, tell emergency crews I own the shop. They let me in. Inside the store is Mike and one of our better customers, Dixon, kind of followed me over from the small shop or from my Hot Comics days. And they tell me they were just sitting there talking, and all of a sudden they hear, bam! And they all kind of like, you have that momentary 2 seconds when you're trying to figure, WTF! And then they realize nothing's happened, and they look out, and they realize that the car that was parked in front of my store is gone. And they look a little closer, and they see smoke, and they get out, and they notice it is now in the ditch, wiped out, with another car embedded into the side of its door. Not only that, but the hair salon next door's front window is totally gone. What had happened? An elderly lady apparently passed out or had a heart attack. And as elderly people are wont to do when they pass out in a moving vehicle, they accelerate the son of a bitch to Mach speed. Hit the cul-de-sac, or not the cul-de-sac, but the roundabout, and went airborne. And from the 500 feet to where the salon lady's car was, as unfortunately it was her car in front of my store, she apparently hit the ground less than 50 feet from her car, barreled into it. The bumper of her car went through the salon window and then ended up in the ditch. Now, before you all get alarmed, I will tell you that the lady in question that did the had the accident did survive. I believe she's okay. I don't know for sure. But then you started talking about what ifs. My customer Dixon, for whatever reason, parked in the back of the store that day. Never did that before. Mike parked in the back of the store. If the car had been 10 feet closer, the bumper would have gone through my window. Now, I had the cash register right up against the window because it was like the only phone and wall socket I had. I don't know if Mike would have survived if he had been there. In the hair salon, her tanning stuff and all the hair gear was towards the back of the shop. So she wasn't, you're not standing at the front window. And it was just really weird. And as I was sitting there, we're watching, you know, traffic go around and they're cleaning stuff up. I thought I saw the founder of Hot Comics, Brian, drive by. Because I always told him, hey, stop in sometime whenever you get a chance. And, of course, he looked around, found nowhere to park, and kept right on going.
Now,
that was probably the scariest car crash I'd ever seen. I mean, we'd seen a lot of crashes at the big store, but they were never, like, right up front and in your face. They were like, they hit the Dairy Queen across the street, or I think the worst one is when an elderly guy stopped for a person taking a left in a garbage truck, smashed behind him. He cartwheeled into the guy in front of him. Everybody, of course, ran to aid the guy in front of him, but when nobody realized, the car that was trying to take a left got hit, rolled about a block away and stopped, and nobody found that until almost the emergency crews were leaving.
Because,
you know, it was like people looked up and said, hey, why is that car smoking down there? And they ran down, and there was another victim in there. The garbage truck guy was fine. I mean, when you're driving, what, a, you know, 100-ton truck filled with garbage, you're going to be fine no matter what you hit. But we saw the cops trying to subdue a guy as he walked past the store. But I'll save that for the 40th episode.
And we always knew that spring had come, not when the Dairy Queen across the street from the White Bear Avenue store, not when that opened, but when somebody ran into it with their car.
Yeah.
Every year, someone would come up to the Dairy Queen and slam into it. And it was a cement block building. You know, it wasn't, well, first off, it wasn't hard to see because you had to pretty much go around and then park next to it. But it was cement blocks. So these cars, every year, one car, person would go into the parking space, then all of a sudden jump forward, wham, and they'd chip the paint on the Dairy Queen and destroy their front bumper. Every time.
Yeah.
What it was, there was a year where we were out.
Good times.
We were outside, and we saw it happen. And I said, well, it's now officially spring. Of course, we also knew it was officially too damn cold.
We always made sure we were the first person to get an ice cream cone from him when he opened up in February, and we were the last The last day he was there, we had ice cream cone. Of course, we'd usually be standing out in T-shirts and the blowing snow and sub-zero temperatures, eating a cone, waving to people as they drove by. I wonder if his sales went down when we left.
Well, come on. He was across the street from a comic shop. It had to be more than just us going over there. Us comic shop folks, we aren't exactly the paragon of fitness.
Yeah, it was more, you know, whatever was convenient.
Also, when it got to a certain temperature, you would have this giddy look on your face because you knew that you could take hot water outside, throw it in the air, and it would crack.
Oh, that's a great Minnesota trick. When it's sub-zero, we're talking like, I think below 20, 25, you take hot water in a pan or in glass, whatever. You go outside, throw it into the air, and it instantly crystallizes into a cloud, just kind of blows away. And, of course, you always know when it's cold because the weather newscasters, who apparently get big bonuses to step outside, they'll go outside and do that, and they'll do all sorts of other goofy tricks like, you know, I'm going to pound a nail in the wood with this frozen banana, you know. Yes, we have fun in Minnesota winter.
Well, one of the stories I keep threatening to tell, I work group homes. I worked part-time at a group home here near where I live. And the guy who ran it was Scott Nutter. Great guy. Tons of fun. I miss working with him. I really miss working with him. But I was a part-timer, and I would work Friday nights, Saturday mornings, and then, you know, one or two other shifts during the week. And I learned...
I want to interject. When you said tons of fun, you got to realize now, Scott Nutter, describe the size of Scott Nutter. I mean, this guy is a power squatter, a power lifter. I mean...
Bench press.
He's massive.
I think
he is scarily massive.
I think his record on squat is around 900 pounds. But he concentrates on bench press. And last I heard, he was close to having a 700-pound bench press. Now, Scott, at his peak, weighed around 450. But it wasn't, you know, fat, because when he walked, he didn't move. He was like all torso.
Remember the one day he came to watch a wrestling program at my wife's house, and my wife was just astonished, like, oh, my God, is he going to break the furniture? I said, possibly.
But I learned real quickly that, you know, we had awake overnight shifts. And I learned pretty quickly that if he was written down for an awake overnight shift, because the Friday overnight guy wasn't there or the Saturday overnight guy was taking a day off or something, and he couldn't get anybody to work, he would write in his name. He's doing the overnight because he couldn't get anybody else. But if I was working, I would get a call about an hour before the end of my shift. Corey, I'm feeling like crap. I'm not going to be able to make the overnight. Is there any way in the world? You know, I will take your shift tomorrow morning if you do the overnight. And he would guilt me into taking the overnight, and I'd go, okay, so let me drive home, grab some comics, buy, you know, some soda and snacks so that I could stay awake all night after, you know, being at a full-time job from 7 o'clock to 4 and then at the group home from 5 to midnight. So, it's, you know, I'd be awake and at work for 27 hours. And after about 3 or 4 times, I pretty much just realized if he's listed on an overnight on an evening when I'm working, I better pack stuff in the car because I'm the one doing the overnight. And it got to the point where he wouldn't even try. The one I remember, and it became sort of our joke, is he would come, and he would say, Corey, I'm fat, I'm stupid, and I don't have anybody to work. Well, Scott, maybe you should walk around the block, read a book, and hire somebody. Nah, to hell with that. Can you do the shift?
To hell with that.
Oddly enough, when I was director at the group home, I didn't have anybody I could do that. Because I would, you know, ask the evening person, is there any way in the world you could take the shift? No, can't do it. No. And I can't even tell you how many times there I am, the director coming in because the overnight guy didn't show up, got sick, left the country without notice.
Was that when I had the shop? Because I remember you asked me a couple times if I could do it, but I don't recall if that was while I had the shop or maybe I'd already started at TSA.
It was before you'd started at TSA, because I said, you know, if you want a part-time job, I was director at the group home, and my overnight guy was quitting. I am not making this up. He was quitting his job so he could follow Bob Dylan on tour. And I said, look, it's an easy job.
You gotta have a drink.
All you gotta do, stay up all night. That's all you gotta do. Check the guys every half hour. If anything happens, you call me. You could be on the internet, you could watch movies, you could play video games. And you decided to go with a government job. How dare you? How dare you, sir?
I know. Those benefits and, you know, the fact government's been around for 200 plus years and, you know, two kids and a hamster, you know, that hamster ate a lot.
Well, yeah, and the group home's not there anymore. I got out before that company.
Yeah, so I think I'll stick with what I... Now, did you offer the job to little Mike?
I did, and he said that it wasn't worth it for the drive because he was living in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
And the group home was in Chandler. Yeah. I would have offered it to Butch, but, you know, I know better than to offer a job to Butch.
Yeah, that's a different story about Butch and Jobs, but we'll get into that on the 40th episode.
So,
gotta lay the subplots down. I mean, you remember all those Marvel books from the 60s and 70s? They always, you know, the main story maybe went one, two issues, but there was always a subplot. So you come back.
Now, I'm reading some early Avengers. And there's one subplot that, as I read it, you know, not everything Stan wrote was golden. Do you remember?
Heretic!
Captain America came back. And, you know, they had the rest of the Avengers leave, and Cap was leading the Avengers. And he felt guilty that he was taking money from Tony Stark to lead the Avengers. So he was trying to get a job, and he wrote Nick Fury a letter asking if he could work for S.H.I.E.L.D. And he didn't hear back, and he didn't hear back, and he didn't hear back. Now, normally, you know, that'd be an okay subplot. The problem was Stan, well, let's just say Stan had written a lot of romance comics. And if you read that, why hasn't Fury emailed me back? Is there something I did back in World War II that I don't remember? Did I make him angry? Does he think I'm not capable? What's the problem? Why hasn't he emailed me back? With Cap, you know, with his hand on his forehead and his head bowed as if he's sobbing. And this goes on for like almost a year until Roy Thomas comes in and dismisses it with, oh, I'm too busy to work for S.H.I.E.L.D. now. And it's never heard from again.
So basically what you're saying is that was the first bromance ever listed in comics.
So, Joe, one of the other stories, and I've heard this story a whole bunch of times, but it's still a lot of fun, and it's historical now. You went to the Chicago Con.
Oh, yeah.
The year before Wizard bought it. And Image was so big at the time, they weren't even on the floor. They were outside in a tent. So why don't you tell us about your encounters with Image?
Yeah, we had all hopped. God, what year was that?
I think it was 93.
Wasn't it?
No, it was after, because we didn't really hang out.
You're right, because... And this will lead to when we ran into Rob Liefeld. But what had happened was we basically, God knows who watched the shop. It might have been
my
wife. It probably was my wife. But
it was me, because was the first time I watched the shop.
So basically the whole gang went down. It was me, my partner Pat, Butch definitely, Jess, Dave, I believe – Dan must have gone. I don't know if Brian went, because Brian didn't really go to cons. Because what Brian doesn't know, the founder of Hot Comics, what he didn't know about toys just never existed, because the guy was just a toy guru. So while he wasn't all that interested, and I'm pretty sure Dan went. So we all basically hopped in our cars. We went down. On the way down, of course, the big thing Butch liked to do is put on his hockey mask and drive up to cars next to him and just look at them and wave his arms while the guy next to him was holding the wheel. So that was quite comical. It's a wonder we never got pulled over. But as we went,
well, you did get pulled over, but we'll get into that.
That was actually, I think, at a different one. But I don't want to mix up stories now because, as old age creeps in, it's all a blur. And I wasn't even doing anything except, Domino's pizzas and Twinkies during the 90s. So the big deal was, of course, Image had all the creators there. Wizard just bought the Comic-Con. So that was a buzz going on. What would happen? Wilts Portacio, I believe, no, he was already with Image. Dale Keown just signed on with Image that weekend to bring Pitt to it because he showed up too and he wasn't announced. So we decided we were going to go check out the Image tent. And basically, it was like one of those tents you can rent that just fits. I would say it was probably about half a football field long. It was pretty big. So as you're sitting there, you would line up and get ready to go in, and they were going to have you sit down, and the Image guys, God knows where they were, they would come in later. So as we're lined up and we're going in, there was a guy standing at the very front, and he was shaking everybody's hands, and he was saying, thank you, we appreciate your support going in. I shook his hand, we went in, and everybody's like, who's that? That was Todd McFarlane. Hey, whoa, wait, but you can't go back because there's already about 100 people behind you pushing past them. So kudos to Todd. I mean, he shook everybody's hand at the beginning of the Image tent and tried to get in. When you got into the Image tent, you'd sit down and you were all cordoned off with various colors. So basically certain groups, you had a first area where rows of about 20 deep, you would sit down, maybe it's 30 deep, I don't know, but you'd sit in rows, and as they would allow you to get up, you'd go back past the guys hawking the various dealers' art. If you bought any of the art, and we did, you would be brought to the front of the line to get autographs. Otherwise, you'd stay in line, you'd go past some of the Image guys that were running the show, and I believe they must have been people from Malibu at the time. And then you would get in line for the Image guys, and you were all allowed one autograph per person. And, it was Rob, Todd, I don't recall if Jim Lee was there that weekend or not. He might not have been. Silvestri, Larson. Who am I missing? I got five.
Well, you had McFarlane at the front door. Eric Larson? Well, Jim Valentino.
Jim Valentino, right. And he was just had gotten kicked off Guardians of the Galaxy. Because of all the Image guys, what people forget is Todd McFarlane was already off Spider-Man long before he started with Image. So all his stories about, well, I was being mistreated and blah, 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 to me ring hollow because he'd already made his millions selling God knows how many copies of Spider-Man. And he had already finished his run. Well, I don't even remember how long it was. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Was it 6 original guys? Then Wils Portacio.
Yeah. Yep, it was 6 and then Wils Portacio. Yeah.
Those
was
the original.
The 7th? Who then mysteriously vanished from all of their press releases and everything.
Yeah, the rumor we had later on was, I believe, didn't his sister pass away, and it just devastated him, and he went back home. Because he sold all his properties to Jim Lee, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
And like I said, and Dale Keown was there. I don't recall if Jim Lee was there or not. I'll have to talk to my partner, Pat, because he'd remember that. So basically, you'd go online, and whatever you chose to have people autograph, they would autograph. And I remember talking with Todd, or Rob, and at the time, I believe he was the only one that had an Image book actually out, number one. And he, I mentioned we were with a retail store, and he said, how's everything selling? And I said, we sold out, which was true. My employee Dave went and had a book autographed by him. And we actually have it on tape where he went back to the hotel room and he said, "Rob, this is an utter piece of blankety blank," ripped it in half and threw it out the hotel window. Half of it went down to the ground where a bunch of fanboys went and grabbed it. "Hey, it's autographed. Where's the other half?" The other half unfortunately landed on a little outcropping and never went down. And you know, Dave made a statement, but we were trying to tell him, "Dude, why don't you just take it back to the shop and sell it for $20? I said, "I'll give you the whole $20. Nah, it's got to be destroyed." Dave was like a big-time artist. He hated his art. I mean, it was just – I mean, Dave would sit there and literally critique the art. Okay, here he is. First of all, look at the way Shaft is shooting this guy. He's not even holding a crossbow correctly. And then he shoots up, and the guy, you know, he's leaning forward. He takes the arrow. And then he goes backwards. Ah! And then he spins around and falls over the balcony. That's not possible. It was funny. Dave, go back to Henry Rollins. But it was funny. I mean, just, I don't remember anything about McFarlane. I do remember talking to Valentino because I told him, I brought him Shadow Man number one. No, not Shadow Hawk. Man. Normal Man.
Oh, Normal Man.
Normal Man number one. Which, again, a plug, if you're looking for a good series, go buy it. Image has it all in one big, thick book. Fun, especially if you're a comic fan. A lot of cool references and neat cameos. And, you know, we talked about that, and I told him, you know, I'm kind of sorry to see that you're off Guardians of the Galaxy. And he said, yeah, I offered to Marvel to do it, but when the Image thing broke, they just released me. And he said that he had planned to stay till issue 50. And, you know, it's really too bad Marvel didn't let him do it because the quality, I never made it to issue 50 with that particular series of Guardians of the Galaxy because as soon as he left, it was bad. And he said he was going to have a series come out where he was going to use the plots that he wrote and just finish up the story so I could buy that series and see how he would have ended it. And as far as I know, he didn't, or if he did, I never saw it. And but it was neat chatting with him. Now, my buddy Pat and I, we got into this bad habit of getting into competitions with each other in terms of who would buy what. I mean, we're talking at the original Hot Comics when Brian owned it. We would walk into one of Brian's incredible sales, and he only did sales maybe once, twice a year. And I think I ran up like a tab of like $400, you know, half issues, toys, whatever. Pat ran up one of about $300. And then he stops. And I'm like, God, am I going to win finally this year? Because Pat's not one to buy something he doesn't want. Pat kind of, he looks back, he rubs his chin, scraggly beard, and he goes, "Ah, let me see that Amazing Spider-Man number 2. Like $900. Ah, that good, I take that. Let me look at that." And I'm already like, oh, my God, he just blew me out of line. He sat out there for 15 minutes. Ended up like, I think, a $1,500 bill. So at the Image tent, Pat goes with me to go. We go in to look at original art. Now, the guys running the tent, we got a good rapport with because they recognized we were fun guys. We were actually having a decent time. And so by the end of the thing, oh, the other big thing was Butch. Butch is the friendliest guy, and he just comes across with creators. He loves comics. I mean, if we could get him to be a liaison to comic creators to invite them to comic cons, we'd have everybody coming. Because, I mean, that he would just sit and he would talk up with these guys, and so he got it so that we almost had the run of the Image tent. We could pretty much go in and out at will. I mean, if we were going to try to get more autographs, you know, the guys would say, "Well, tell you what, just sit in the front row, right in the corner," and they got to know Pat and I because we went in and we bought original art. Now, the original art then was, like, extremely overpriced. But it was nice. I'll ask Pat if I can tell how much he spent because, you know, his wife's out there, there's spies out there, and I don't want him to get in trouble. Well, not his wife, but his girlfriend. But he really blew a lot of money. And it was all, I think, on, like, Dale Keown covers, He picked up a McFarlane cover, some Silvestri art. And, of course, the big thing about Mark Silvestri was his wife. Oh, wow. Is she hot? And she was wearing a low-cut cleavage shirt and in a tot tent full of sweaty fanboys. Oh, I don't. Maybe that's why I didn't remember talking to a lot of these image creators, because she was just vivacious. And naturally, Pat got to go up. Ah, front of the line. I got to look at the cleavage. Pat, did you buy her art? Ah, I tell you, yeah, he signed it for me, but I like to look at her. Well, I ended up buying two pieces of original art, and they were Wolverine covers that he had done in his brief run before Sylvester's before 50. And I think I paid like $600 and $800. One of them was Wolverine, where he's standing there with a cigar shooting machine gun, and the other one had him red cover popping the claws. And it was a neat mat work that showed the artwork and then the original comic. And of course, when I went up to get him autographed, he had the, you know, slice the shrink wrap around it so he could autograph the actual artwork. And sad thing is the art depreciated for a time. And Pat and I sold it. And then, of course, the prices went through the freaking roof. And so I think I either broke even or lost a little money on the deal. And had I kept it, you know, like four more years, I mean, what the hell did I know? I sold all my Batmans for a quarter a piece, and then Dark Knight came out, and all those books went up to $5-6 a piece. I looked at the original Star Wars toys. I'm used to paying with, like, manly 12-inch G.I. Joes. And then they got the little itty-bitty Star Wars toys. And I'm like, I saw the ad for Star Wars. No one's going to watch this crap. What the hell am I? Forget it. I'm not buying this crap. You know, Alan who? Moore? Never heard of him. Fire the bomb. Send him back to Brett. Never last. Ooh, but Binary. Ah, Binary. Cool character. Now follow Mrs. Mama. Ah, that's a good idea. The image set was a lot of fun. The
You're leaving out my favorite part.
Well, I'll give you that one, but let me finish my thing. Is the Rob Liefeld did a 24-hour signing, and I think he ended about 4 in the morning. At 4 in the morning, I remember Dave and Butch coming up and making noise, and they're like, what happened? Ah, they left. So he ran out of people to sign, so he no do 24. And then Corey's favorite story. Oh, is that, hey, Rob?
Yes.
Oh, okay. The Comic-Con was a big place. And we got to the point where we were, you know, we'd be mocking, like, Gruba coming up to, I got to go back even farther because, you know, when we all lined up to go get part of the 24-hour signing, you know, we got lined up, and Butch, of course, was in rare form. He's like, I'm going to go up and see Rob. I'm going to go say, hi, Rob. And so I'm like, blah, blah. Butch is looking off at like a 45-degree angle or looking behind him like, hey, Rob. He's looking at the back of the tent yelling, hey, Rob. And people are turning around thinking it's Rob, and it isn't. And then as soon as Rob shows up for the signing, Butch leaves. He didn't even stay for the signing. Hey, Rob. Now, later, it got to be so funny. Cough break. Saw somebody who that was part of our group, they'd be like, hey, Rob. The only guy I felt sorry for was, I can't think of his name. The lawyer that used to write the column in the Comic Buyer's Guide.
Oh, Robert Ingersoll.
Robert, thank you. Because we were standing in the other dealer room and where the other artists were. And this was an incredible room because I was standing in line waiting, and there's Ben Edlund of Tick. Nobody's talking to him. There's Don Rosa. Nobody's talking to him. Everybody's in line trying to get Posada and Pamani because they're doing Ghost Rider at the time. So as I'm standing in line waiting, I see Butch at the far end of the hall, and I go, "Hey, Rob!" And Ingersoll happened to be between us, and he swings his head towards me. And then on the far end, Butch goes, "Hey, Rob!" And he swings back. And then, of course, I go, "Hey, Rob!" He swings, "Hey, Rob!" Whoa! He swings his head back, "Hey, Rob!" And then he realizes I'm not talking to him. And he just goes back, "Hey, Rob!" Well, that was like one of the just standing gags of the con. Just, "Hey, Rob! Hey, Rob!" I have on fan.com. Back then, I was doing a sketchbook of everybody, and I have sketches just amazing of like Neil Gaiman gave me a sketch, the creative team from Omaha, Rob Reeler and Kate Worley, Joel Linsner. I mean, I got all these sketches there, and I got all the sketches from the Image tent day. Now, the guys at Image weren't doing sketches. Matter of fact, when Dale Keown came in, he took it to heart, only one autograph of Bert's. The only exception was, of course, if you bought art, because Pat was very disappointed because he went up and he had his art and some Hulks and wanted him autographed, and Dale's like, "Well, I'm only supposed to autograph one." And Pat's like, "Well, yeah, but I just bought $1,000 art piece from you. I only got to do one." Because by the end of the con, the guys were autographing everything. I mean, you know, you'd have times where you'd come into the tent and there'd only be a couple of the creators there. And if you waited, because they had specific times when everybody would be there. So.
And then no matter what you came in, if Butch was there, he would shout, "Hi, Rob."
Hi, Rob. And, you know, of course, like I said, we got right to the front of the line all the time. It was great. These guys knew us, and it was just a blast. I mean, God wish we had digital cameras back then, because, I mean, you'd have been able to take billions of pictures. And as it is now, most of it's memories. And one of these days, as in a future thing, we'll do kind of a we'll go to the comicartfan.com. Now, I put my gallery under Joel Ryder, and you can look at all these sketches from all the people. And every sketch, almost every sketch has a story to it. And I think it'd be fun just that, you know, you guys can go to that website and we'll do a read-along podcast where you look at the sketch and I'll tell you the story behind it, because it ranges from early 80s to mid-90s. A lot of comic history in there. Some creators not with us anymore. And I feel fortunate to actually have them. Some creators, you just ain't going to get a sketch from. You know, I mean, there's almost no way Linsner does sketches because he's busy doing painting. Hey, Rob. So if you ever happen to see Corey or me walking the hallways at a con, just give us a good old, "Hey, Rob." You know what you're talking about.
Which is frightening.
Yeah, the last kudos on you. See, no, what's frightening is now you got my mind going a million miles a minute. Sunday. Before all the Image boys came out from whatever brunch they were drinking, Todd McFarlane came to the tent, and while the crowd was waiting to get in again, he actually talked with people for about 45 minutes. We all waited for the Image guys. They were supposed to be there at 11. They showed up a little bit before 12, and Todd, again, kudos to him. He was out front talking to us, you know, keeping us entertained. I think Todd has not lost the fact that, you know, if you're a fan for the most point, you know, he'll spend time and talk with you. I mean, even at the Neil Gaiman trial, when you thought, hey, things are going to be okay, you know, Neil and Todd got together and there was a kid that they did posts for pictures and, you know, did autographs for. Well, you can rant on later about his business thing. That'll be for the 80th episode, maybe.
There you go. Well, the last story I have. Now, one of the local comic creators, Terrence Greep Jr., has a secret identity. He wrestles under the name Spider Baby.
Oh, my God, I can't believe you blew it in public.
That's right, I just outed him. And that's a joke on two levels. Terrence is also very active in the gay community as being, you know, one of the first, if not the only, gay wrestler who's not a gay, you know, he's not like Adrian Adonis where it's part of his character. No, he's out and he's a wrestler, but it's not, you know, any of the whole silly gay wrestler stuff you always see when they have that. So I go to see his matches at this little dinky club called the Eagle Club in St. Paul. So about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I go to the matches, and there's probably, if we're lucky, 35 people there. They're going to have 5 matches. The first match, of course, that's your curtain jerker. That's, you know, the people who aren't that good. They're going to do the first match. Now, the second match, believe it or not, is the championship match. Now, Joe, even if you're not a huge wrestling fan, do you have your championship match as the second match of the night?
Not really, because that's usually your best quality match. It's your most experienced worker and probably the most, even I've been to one of these shows, and even if you're not into what the storyline is, you catch up really quick because these guys are that good at getting you rolling.
Well, and the other thing is you build through the night. You know, when you go to see anything, your championship is the very last thing. You know, when you go to boxing matches, when you go to UFC, when you watch baseball, the World Series is the last game of the season. So instead, here's your championship match as the second match of the night. And we're a bunch of rowdy, no good. Let's put it this way.
Yeah.
We make more noise than anybody else there.
Yeah, and it's you got to remember, this ain't your WWE TNA crowd. This is, it's quiet.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to hear almost every comment, and, it's these guys got to work their chops because, if you're too thin-skinned, there's some comment. There are a few times I've been there, and I've listened to these guys' comments, and I just want to turn and say, hey, shut the blank up. You know, your comments aren't helping. And, you know, I'm impressed because these guys are doing something I've never tried, you know.
But
I digress.
But you digress. But we start a lot of silly chants, like the old ECW fans. I think last time one of the guys came out in a mask, Mexican wrestling mask. So as he was wrestling, we were doing the soccer. Ole, 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 ole. We tend to start all sorts of silliness like that. There was one girl came out one time, had these horrible, horrible spray on tan. And we just started chanting she was an Oompa Loompa because she was orange.
Oompa Loompa.
So the championship match starts and I shout out, who the hell booked this? Vince Russo's brain dead cousin?
Ooh.
And, you know, the people around me laugh and everything. And about a minute later, there's a hand on my shoulder, and I hear behind me, so you've got a problem with the booking? And I, of course, am full of piss and vinegar. I turn and go, yeah, I am. You never, and I mean never, have a championship match as a curtain jerker match. It devalues the championship. Why should I care about the rest of the card if I already know who's going to win the championship? And the guy who's the booker says, well, you know, it's for storyline reasons and blah, blah, blah. And I go, you know what? I don't care. Your champion is wrestling second. Your next match is a tag team match with no belts involved. Your next match after that is an over-the-top battle royal. And your match after that is a blow-off match that I don't care about. If I actually, I might leave after the championship match because I'm here to see if the champion is going to retain his title or not. Well, you know, we're trying to blah, 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 blah. And, you know, a little while later, he goes to the back and the rest of the matches, you know, the champion comes out to interfere in all the other matches and it gets all over. And one of the wrestlers comes up to me. I will not give his name because he could get in a lot of trouble. You know, we're outside chatting. One of the wrestlers comes up to me and says, I'm glad you had the balls to say that because everybody back there is saying the same thing.
Oh, I love it. Okay. So anyways, I was asking if Terrence was the champ that night.
No, he was involved in a tag team match with his former partner that he's, you know, been feuding with for a year, and they had to team together to face, you know, some other team. Now, the champ is the Black Stallion, who actually looks like, you know, he's got the bodybuilder body. He does a good match. The thing I like best about Black Stallion, though, is he makes the crowd hate him. Even the fans who are smart in the business.
He's got that talent.
No, even the people, you know, because everybody
that's the amazing thing.
Everybody there knows it's a work. And he got Lisa so pissed that she was completely out of her character. Oh. Lisa's Big Mike's wife. And she goes and she's got her lines and she does her stuff and everything. But when Black Stallion gets in her face, she forgets that it's, you know, entertainment. She goes off on him. And it's a beautiful thing to watch.
The reason I ask about Terrence is because, you know, Terrence had the belts, or various belts for a long time, which would be kind of like the equivalent of U.S. champion or the Intercontinental champion. And Terrence's biggest thing is that when he was Spider Baby, he was a bad guy. But when the comic guys showed up, we cheered him. And that would always throw the newbie that he was thrown in the ring with off, because the newbie is supposed to be the good guy. And Terrence is trying to explain, no, you don't understand. This crowd is going to cheer for me. You got to be the bad guy. No, I'll win him over. And it never worked, because, you know, and the problem is these are new guys and they don't get it. And I asked Terrence once, I said, you know, now let me get it straight. You've got the belt, but you're constantly dealing with newbies. I said, are you like the guy that is giving these guys experience? He goes, no, I'm just booked that way. You know, which kind of ties into what you were talking about booking earlier. You know, it's like, if the guy's going to be the champ, don't feed him the fresh meat, you know? Give him some intermediate guys, you know? Yep. But that's my rant.
Yep, Terrence still has a belt.
Sticking to it.
Terrence still has a belt, but I don't know what. It's one of the smaller federations he works with. I don't understand it. Well, ladies and gentlemen.
We don't have to. We just pay our $10 and enjoy.
You've wasted another hour of your life. Listen to us blather on about funny books. And
you know, surprisingly, the Alaskan internet was working pretty good today.
Yeah.
Had a couple technical problems on other ones, but I haven't had any interruptions.
That's right. So this is actually going to go up in a week.
Woohoo!
One other thing. If Joe and I are not able to record next week, I will be doing a special comics Q&A episode. So if you have any questions, I've got about 7 questions left for my column that I haven't written in about 2 months because I've just been busy with other things. If you have any questions about comics, go ahead and send them to us. Joe, what is the email address?
I don't know. I'm scared to put anything up other than what we're doing. No, I believe it's crazycomics@gmail.com.
And we have a Facebook
fan
page.
You can also send us an email. Yep, through the Facebook page. I keep a contact on that. And, of course, you can always find everything at the Solitaire Rose Network, which is
crazycomics.solitairerose.com, part of the Solitaire Rose family of websites, which will be growing in a week or two, believe it or not. Ooh, I've got another project. Well, no, there's the web strip and the podcast and then the old site.
Yeah, don't forget to go to mattressranch.com, even if you're not going to buy a mattress.
Now, here's the thing. It's a mattress ranch. So these are wild mattresses that he has corralled and tamed and is ready to sell to you. Is that the gist of it?
You know, I'm telling you, you got to go check this guy out on YouTube or at his website, because once you see it, you'll understand it.
Oh, dear God. All right.
Save money at the mattress ranch.
Well, just remember, ladies and gentlemen, that the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most.